Do you tear up when you reflect on the devastation of Hurricane Maria? Does the question, paper or plastic, at the grocery store send you into a mental tailspin? Have you beat yourself up before for using your garbage disposal instead of composting a plate of food scraps? If you're having extreme feelings about the environment, you may be suffering from eco-anxiety. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Laura Schmidt is co-founder of the Good Grief Network. It's a support group that meets in Salt Lake City to discuss feelings about the climate crisis. It helps people understand they are not alone. Laura, welcome to The Morning Show. Hi, Laura. Go ahead. Are you there? And we're still having some difficulty and trying to get Laura Schmidt on the phone here. We're talking about climate grief this hour and the Good Grief Network, a support group that meets in Salt Lake City to discuss feelings about the climate. Do you have feelings about climate? Eco-anxiety, a word we learned in 2017. What about eco-grief? Join in with your questions, 800-642-1234. You can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. This relatively new psychological affliction, eco-anxiety, is a chronic fear of environmental doom, the concern that increasing human development and pollution are leading to floods, famines, heat waves, species extinctions, and ultimately the demise of our planet. Laura Schmidt is co-founder of the Good Grief Network. That's a support group for climate grief. Laura, are you there?
I am. Good morning.
Good. Very good. I'm glad we caught up with you. So how did the Good Grief Network come into being?
That's a good question. I spent much of my time in my master's here at the University of Utah in the Environmental Humanities program, studying how do we create resiliency in people who already acknowledge that climate change is a problem. So people like scientists or writers or activists, folks who look at the problem face on and continue to do so. And so I wanted to answer the question about how we help them become resilient and how we help them continue to do their work. And so through that process, I created 10 steps and then decided that we're going to put that into the world. We're not just going to keep it on the thesis materials. We're going to actually form a group and try to talk about these concerns, because if I'm feeling it and other scientists and writers and activists are feeling it, then we're probably not the only ones.
Well, could that be in line with Alcoholics Anonymous, the 10-step program?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I have some roots in Al-Anon, which is a support group created for people whose lives have been affected by alcoholism. So you're not necessarily an alcoholic, but you have been affected by it. And so I'm quite familiar with the 12-step program and realized what sort of community and ritual, you know, going to these meetings, you always know what they're going to say starting out. You know, the ritual is the same. You see the same types of people. And so that's why we created STEPS, is to form that community, to have some sort of regularity, and to have, you know, the steps change every week, but we at least know the intro and the closing are going to be the same. You know, we'll see some of the same friendly faces. And then this allows us to really dig in deep when you start to build that community up.
So how does this idea of eco-anxiety or climate anxiety or eco-grief, whatever you want to term you want to use, how does that feeling, that fear, get addressed by the Good Grief Network?
That's a good question. So we do a few different things. One is to run through the steps, and we can talk about the steps more specifically if you'd like, but it allows us to, the main goal is to reconnect to ourselves and to connect to other people and to connect to the natural world. And I feel like there's not a lot of space in this culture to do that. So once you get this interconnection going and realize how interdependent we are, then that fuels a lot of resiliency, and it allows us to feel our feelings without being scared of them.
What is the first step?
The first step is much like one in AA or Al-Anon, and it's accept the problem and its severity. So, it's just checking in about where we're at and the sort of information that we think is true about climate change or systemic issues more generally. And then once we create that baseline of understanding, then it allows us to move further.
But couldn't that bring up tension among group members because there are many different beliefs about the climate?
Yes, yeah, that's exactly right. And so what we do is, we don't stand there with our scientific publications, but we talk it out and we come to some sort of consensus so we have a baseline understanding of operations. This group particularly is for people who already understand that climate is an issue and it's impacting parts of the world, maybe not specifically where we are, but it's definitely a threat to our civilized society as we see it.
What is the next step in the process or the next few steps that you go through?
So step two is to acknowledge that I'm part of the problem as well as the solution. A lot of environmentalists are made to feel bad. And I heard it in your intro when you're talking about, do you feel bad because you use a plastic bag or you drive someplace? We're made to feel like we need to be 100% on board and, you know, doing everything that we possibly can to be eco-friendly, but we live in a system that doesn't make it too easily for that. So if you realize that you're part of the problem, but you're cognizant of it, you're knowledgeable about the fact that you can participate in the solutions as well, then maybe you are not held down by that guilt that people try to push onto you. And then three is about embracing uncertainty. Our culture is very rigid and really likes to hold on to control. And so if we can learn to let go of outcomes and let go of this idea that everything has to be certain, then it frees us up to be a little bit more agile and mobile.
Yeah, let's go to Kelly now, who joins us from Cascade. Hi, Kelly, go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to say I'm really delighted to have this topic being discussed. I've been involved in environmental and backwater activism in Europe, in South America, and locally, and I've seen devastation in Colorado.
And Kelly, you're fading in and out here. I know that you have a couple kids and you're doing what you can to minimize your negative impact. Do you have a question?
I'm really just interested in hearing more. I feel like I've kind of, in just trying to live my day-to-day life as an adult with two kids, I'm not able to be involved in a direct way in the way that I used to be. And I feel it really tugs at my heart because I think one of the most important things I want to share with my kids is my love for the earth, is the beauty that is around us. And I look around and I see trees that I think, oh my God, like 10 years ago, these trees were all beautiful and now they're all gone. And what's this world going to be like when my kids become adults and they want to have kids? Like, it really eats at me on the inside. And, you know, I have my husband saying, but just be with us now. Like, don't keep worrying about it, but I do.
Laura, go ahead.
Yeah, good morning. So I resonate with that a lot. And the thing is that we really try to emphasize that you can practice your skills from anywhere. And so I know you said that you traveled to South America and you're an activist in different areas, but how can you maintain something? How can you work on yourself in this time and place and use your skills as an asset right now? I mean, we can't always go and travel to do activism work in different places. And so if you can harness that energy towards this time and place now, and part of it is teaching your kids how to be resilient folks and how to work through their inner work and their feelings so that they can be present, like your husband said, very much be embodied in the moment instead of this existential fear that you're feeling about what's going to happen in the future.
Kelly, thanks so much for the call. Laura, is there a step or perhaps multiple steps in the program where people seem to get held up the most, that are the most difficult for them?
Yeah, that's a good question. As simple as it might sound, feeling your feelings is one of our steps, and doing inner work, another step. Those two things, as I mentioned earlier, our culture is not too supportive of. And so when we're trying to help people feel like they can do their inner work so that they're not bringing in past problems into the present, which can exacerbate some problems and some feelings, and then feeling your feelings, which humans have a whole range of feelings, but our culture tells us only that, maybe three or four are acceptable. And so when we tell people that it's okay to be sad, just don't get stuck there, don't dwell there. It's okay to be angry, just don't get stuck there, move through these feelings, because if you numb the eco-anxiety, if you numb your anxiety and your sadness, then it also numbs your capacity for joy.
Well, the whole climate versus weather conversation made headlines about a week ago when we saw a President Trump tweet, in the East, it could be the coldest New Year's Eve on record. Perhaps we could use a little bit of that good old global warming that our country, but not other countries, was going to pay trillions of dollars to protect against, bundle up. People have paid attention to that message for a number of reasons. For some, there's confusion. For some, when it comes to climate versus weather, is that something you've heard concerns about?
Yeah, definitely. So I live in Utah, and we definitely have a lot of different weather patterns. But basically, the idea between weather and climate are very different, and we need a sort of understanding how they are different. And weather is sort of the moment by moment what's happening, but climate is an overall trend of what's happening. So, for example, I can tell you that in Utah, our snowpack has been less and less every year for, let's say the last decade. That would be a climate trend, as opposed to right now in this moment, we have 7 feet of snow in the mountains, which we don't, by the way. But that's kind of the difference, and it's ignorant to try to combine the two, because they're very different. And so Good Grief also tries to have some sort of understanding of what the difference is and how to communicate the difference between the two.
How has the current political climate impacted people who struggle with eco-anxiety, who have a fear of climate change?
Yeah, we've seen an influx in our group here in Salt Lake City, but also digitally. We have a presence online in a Facebook group called Good Grief Network, and we've seen a lot of ads, especially since Trump was elected and then became president. And it's this despair that our national leader is not taking this seriously. And what we've also seen is an influx of folks who do things at the ground level and at the local level, and people who want to change in their communities or at the state level. And we've seen mayors across the country still say that they're, committed to the Paris agreements. We've seen cities and towns pledge to go 100% renewable by a certain date. And so if we're not having national leadership, then it's time for us to act on the ground, and it's time for us to act locally where we live and in the communities in which we are.
Do you find that group members find hope and are comforted by a grassroots approach that others, that they can see glimpses of positive things happening in pockets of the country?
Yeah, it's super inspiring to see all these people step forward when we don't have that national leadership. And I think that it is inspiring for us all. Every time a city commits to go 100% renewable, it's this idea that we can really empower ourselves to make change. If we feel powerless at the national level, if we see Trump tweeting ignorant quotes about how we want the earth to be warmer, then that's a little bit of a gut punch. But if you focus locally, if you contact your legislators, if you try to even have a conversation with your neighbor about climate change, all that stuff matters, and it can't be overshadowed.
How have you seen people change through using this step process?
Yeah, so we have seen a huge desire for community and for the space to have these important conversations. And so that's one huge aspect that I've seen is you put something like this into the world and people notice and people want to be involved because we don't often have the opportunity to work through our emotions or to even talk about our emotions. And so that's one big thing I've noticed. But secondly, I've had good grief members tell me that it's changed the way that they operate on the day to day, that they're more mindful, that they pay a bit more attention, and that they try to live a bit more presently right now in the moment instead of, again, this external pressure to figure everything out and to be the person who saves the world. They understand that they're a human being and, you know, we're limited in what we can do, but yet we're incredibly powerful to build community and to influence others to be authentic and to show up in our daily lives.
Well, let's go to Todd, who joins us from Green Bay. Hi, Todd.
Hi, good morning. Good morning to your guest. One of the statements that your guest made was that there seems to be a lack of concern about climate issues with our leadership. I don't know that that's necessarily the case as much as there's a lack or there's a questioning of the actual effectiveness of any policies that are going to be put forth and the expense of those policies, whether there's any kind of a return. And to give you an idea, probably 7 or 8 years ago, Al Gore was on Capitol Hill and gave a press conference. The room was so full of people with cameras, you could hardly hear him speak. And an hour later, in the very same room, Bjorn Lomborg, who wrote The Skeptical Environmentalist, was in that very same room. There was a C-SPAN camera there, and that was it. And his point was not that we disagree or disavow, you know, climate change or anything else of that nature, but are you willing to put all your money into that cause at the expense of other social programs and so on and so forth? Because there's only so much money to go around. So anyway, that's his warning was more of an economic warning as to how much money we could waste trying to do something that we may have very, very little impact on.
Laura, go ahead. Climate versus economic interests. Climate versus the economy.
Yeah, that's huge. And we see that come up time and time again. And I mean, there are ways to, incentivize the push to renewable energy. I work for a small nonprofit in Utah called Heal Utah, and we work very hard on transitioning away from coal as our main source of power to renewables. But more importantly, there's a quote that they say that says, you can't have an economy on a dead planet. And so, you know, if we know the impacts that are being had because of climate change and we've studied them and we can see that all these feedback loops are going to happen, you know, we have to prioritize some amount of money, I would say a large amount of money, to transitioning to the way that we operate on this planet. And that's because if you don't have a planet to operate on, then your economy doesn't mean much.
Laura Schmidt is co-founder of the Good Grief Network. It's a support group for climate grief. Your questions, 800-642-1234. Does climate change cause stress or anxiety for you? How do you manage it? How do you talk to family and friends or people in your community about climate change? 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. We'll return to the conversation after a check of the news. A Gallup poll this year found that 45% of Americans worry a great deal about global warming. Last spring, the American Psychological Association warned that climate change is beginning to trigger a mental health crisis on a vast scale. We're learning about eco-anxiety, climate grief as well in this hour of the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Eco-anxiety is related to climate grief, which is where Laura Schmidt comes in. She's co-founder of the Good Grief Network. It's a goal to help the goal is to help people cope with what's been called climate grief, that is anxiety, sadness, depression, and other emotions provoked by awareness of the planet's possible unsustainable future. Your questions, 800-642-1234. Do you cope with climate grief? Do you think eco-anxiety is something that people in the mental health profession should take seriously? Does climate change and natural disasters cause you stress and anxiety? 800-642-1234. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. Let's go to Matt now, who joins us from Green Bay. Hi, Matt.
Hi. I just had a question. I have like a 9-month-old daughter at home, and we're a dual-income family, and we're not afforded a lot of time, so cloth diapers are not an option. We're using the disposable diapers, and sometimes those disposable diapers are a little funky, so we end up wrapping them in a plastic bag. I guess I'm just looking for an option for maybe something like a biodegradable, compostable diaper, or just some kind of solution there.
Laura, go ahead.
Good morning. Thanks for calling in. This actually isn't my wheelhouse. I don't focus too much on diapers specifically, but what's great is the internet is such a wonderful tool. And I know you said that you're very busy, but with a simple search, I'm sure you can find something in between. And then also, I would just throw in there that unfortunately, you mentioned that cloth diapers aren't an option because of how time-consuming they are. But this problem that we're facing right now is only going to be solved by feeling a bit of, we have to go through some tough things in order to correct what course we're going on. And so we have to be inconvenient. We have to inconvenience ourselves and our way of life. You know, we're so conditioned to think that it's okay to be super efficient in everything, and that model hasn't worked for us. And so I would just recommend you do a simple search online and see if there's something in between that you can find. And if not, you know, if you're really looking for a solution, then cloth diapers with all of its inconvenience might be the best option if you're concerned about disposable diapers.
Matt, thanks for calling in. Good luck with fatherhood. Let's go to Justin in Madison. Hi, Justin.
Hi there. I just had a comment. I work for a local nonprofit that works on efficiency, and we have found in some of our research that, you know, as the grid is getting cleaner and cleaner, electric technologies are increasingly becoming environmentally beneficial. And so we found sort of like a focus on getting people to look at those technologies, such as electric vehicles, or heat pump technology to provide heating and cooling for the home can actually be really helpful to actually just have a tangible focus on that.
Laura, does the Good Grief Network talk about the things in our daily life that we could change that would be more eco-friendly?
Yeah, we offer some space for that. And when we're not running the 10-step program, we will meet monthly and talk about those types of things, like the technologies that exist in this world or things we're concerned about. And this allows our members to bring up things they're passionate about and then teach all of us about it as well. So, you know, the 10 steps don't run every week as we would like to see them. We have to do them in a series. So 10-week steps, and then we finish that, and then we'll have some just group meetings in the months coming up. So, for example, we'll run the 10 steps again in March. So while they may not, that sort of pragmatic approach doesn't necessarily find its way into the 10 steps. It's more about uncovering the walls that keep you guarded from reconnecting to yourself and to other people in the natural world. There's definitely a space within this network to bring up ideas like that and to look for practical on-the-ground solutions.
Justin, thank you so much for your call. Laura, how has this group impacted your life?
Oh, that's a good question. So, first of all, it's been amazing to see the community, the outpouring of community, just not even here in Salt Lake City, but I've been contacted by people from all around the world saying that they're interested in this and that they have a desire to push forward with talking about their feelings and finding a place to channel their eco-anxiety or grief. And so for me, that's been really refreshing as someone who's trying to put a novel idea into the world. But additionally, I work these steps too. I am not above anybody else in any sort of situation. I'm a facilitator, but at the same time, you know, I also have climate grief, and I see, you know, the fact that we're have running species to extinction at rates faster than we can identify them. And so for me, it brings me solace to participate in something like this, where other people say that they want to be involved as well. And so it definitely helps me, and it helps other people too.
Let's go to Jeremy now, who joins us from Racine. Hi, Jeremy. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. 5 years ago, I started to look into the climate change thing, and I had to start doing research, watching documentaries, Living Dangerously, Cowspiracy, things like that. And after I did my research, it became a little discerning and almost seemed like helplessness. You know, it's like, what can I possibly do to make, you know, to flip this switch? For 30 years, we've been living the way we've been wanting to live without any really thought in climate change and things like that. And then when these things are starting to come to a head spin, it can be overwhelming. So what I've done is just, how do I, you know, live my life? Do I make sure I put my recyclables where they belong? I stay engaged locally with the politicians, asking them, you know, things to better improve our recycling collections, things like that, little victory gardens, LED bulbs, you know, little changes like that, and then passing that information as to why I'm doing it to my children, because it's not going to happen overnight. And it's I believe it's more of a habit than it is anything else. So it's going to take a generation or so to really instill this, you know, conscientious of what you're doing and what you're wasting, and try to conserve as much as you can, and learn to live within your means. You don't need to have a lot of stuff.
Well, Jeremy brings up several points here. One is this idea of this gloom and doom, and this notion that it is a bigger problem than one person. Can one person make a difference?
Yeah, they certainly can. And I mean, we are seeing this every day, but the most important thing that we can do is our own self-work and to move through these gloom and doom feelings that can sometimes paralyze us. Normally, if we're stuck in that sort of route, it's because we're responding with the more instinctual part of our brain. And we can actually take proactive measures and train our brain to respond in ways where the neocortex is more engaged. And this part of our brain is more forward-thinking, it is responsible for problem-solving. And so things like practicing gratitude and looking for beauty and establishing meaning can all help us move through those types of heavy feelings and that gloom and doom.
For the people who have participated in the Good Grief Network, have you seen change as they have progressed through the steps?
Yeah, so our group is still relatively new, and we've gone through the steps twice. We'll do a third round very soon. But, you know, the sorts of changes that we can see that are measurable would be the fact that they continuously come and build community, and that they're invested, and that they change their social media posts to be more, I guess, focused on what it means to be alive in this time and place. And so the fact that they're becoming pillars of strength for their community and bringing the message around to their community, and then, you know, feeding off of our energy as a group and as a community, and then they bring that into their own households, or, you know, even if they have a conversation with their neighbor or their legislators, you know, those are all important changes. And so those are the types of changes we've seen thus far, and I'm excited to continue to move this movement forward and change more lives and impact things in different ways.
Laura, how does social media impact this whole climate grief feeling and eco-anxiety?
I think that social media fuels it a lot, actually. So I've been trying to take a little bit more of a break from social media personally, because you can post anything you want on it, and everybody's going to have an opinion about something. And my understanding is that opinions aren't actually changed on social media. They're changed in small conversations or community conversations. And so while it's a really great organizing tool, it just becomes a sort of sounding board, and I'm not sure that real change happens there.
What is next for the Good Grief Network?
Well, that's a good question. So in addition to the steps that we're going to run in March, we're going to have someone named Adair take over here in Salt Lake City. And then the other co-founder, Amy, and I are going to move to Nebraska and put out a book about good grief. And so that hopefully we will empower folks all around the country or the world to start their own groups. And then we will serve as a hub in Salt Lake City. So we're going to get a book out. We're going to extend this to whoever wants to be participating and then really get the network up and off the ground.
Do you see this as a worldwide effort?
It can be. I don't say that this is the only way to come to some sort of terms with eco grief. There are other movements afoot as well. But I think that we do need to figure out ways to form this reconnection when our society just wants us to be disconnected. So whether it's through good grief or whether it's through a different means, I say that we all need to do this type of work if we want to see real change in the world.
Well, Laura, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Laura Schmidt is co-founder of the Good Grief Network. That is a support group for climate stress and eco-anxiety. Earlier in the hour, we talked with meteorologist Chad Franzen from WSAW-TV in Wausau, getting an update on the climate and the weather forecast for today here in Wisconsin and the weather that is taking place right now on the East Coast. This hour, the morning show was produced by Keely Baltina, Brianne Shasso, and Bill Martins. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and this conversation comes to you on the Ideas Network. Stay with us tomorrow. This time, we turn our eyes back to 2017 to discuss the year in fact-checking. Stay with us.